It's Ramadan, the month when Muslims around the world fast from sunup to sundown as a spiritual discipline. Each day, the fast is broken with a celebratory dinner called an iftar. Ramadan falls at a different time each year, and because this year it falls in August, that makes for a long, hot days without food or water. It's a big commitment. We've called a Muslim foodie, Yvonne Maffei, for some tasty ways to manage a summer fast. She writes the food blog MyHalalKitchen.com.
We're spending about 16 hours a day fasting. That means that we're not having anything to eat or drink. So during the times when we are eating, which is after the sun goes down, we have to really hydrate ourselves. So I always suggest people have lots of water-filled foods like squash, watermelons, things like that, because they give you lots of water as you're eating them.
In fact, Maffei has a recipe that could help anyone beat the heat.
I developed a recipe called a honeydew cooler, which is one of my favorites. And basically, it's just a half of a honeydew melon chopped up with a small guava. And those are kind of hard to find in a lot of stores, but if you go to an ethnic or Hispanic store, you'll tend to find them pretty often. So we have chopped honeydew melon, a small guava, a half of a mango, and a fourth a cup of orange juice. And just put it in a blender, process it for about 30 seconds, and you've got this really refreshing drink that is so tasty. Fruits that you wouldn't think to really mix together, but it's really delicious and it's very tropical.
Let me pick a couple of recipes that you have for the iftar dinner. You've got a recipe for hanger steak with mango salsa.
Beef is just an excellent source of protein, iron that we need, and we lose a lot of that when fasting. So I like to put a thin steak on the grill. It's not really a very heavy steak, so because hanger steak is usually cut pretty thin and it cooks really fast, and paired that with a mango salsa, which is just tomatoes and chopped mango, white onions, and some lime juice. It's really refreshing, and you can have that with a side of rice or couscous maybe. It gives you some energy rather than a sugar crash later on.
The most traditional way, I understand, to break the fast is with a date. Tell us why.
Well, the reason that there's a tradition in the Muslim world to break the fast with dates is because that's the tradition of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. That can be any kind of date. Interestingly enough, it has just the right amount of sugar in it to bring your body's glucose levels up, because when you're towards the end of your fast, you feel a little bit kind of lightheaded, a little bit off. You know, you really need something in your body. And then as soon as you have those dates, you start to feel a little bit more alive again.
And if you go to our website, you'll find a recipe for dates and cream with chopped pistachios and orange zest. Another key moment during Ramadan is the first meal of the day, what you eat to make it to sunset. Yvonne Maffei has a couple of strategies for the morning meal, the suhoor.
We set about 3 alarms in our house to make sure that we don't miss it, because you have to get up around 3:30 in the morning to have time to prepare a meal, sit down, eat it, and stop eating by around 4:30.
That being sunrise.
So in our house, you know, it's not just cereal and milk. I mean, that will never get us through the day. It's things like eggs or even vegetables, fruits, bananas, even smoothies in the morning. I have my cup of coffee at the very end. I figure if I don't have enough time for it, that can go. But the food, I have to have it. And Ramadan is not meant to be a hardship on us. So we are encouraged to have these meals.
As can be told by this conversation and these recipes you've just described, Ramadan isn't only about not eating. In some respect, I would think it's a time to actually enjoy the taste and the experience of food even more.
I would agree. I think that when you break your fast, you realize how much gratitude we need to have for the miracle of food. I mean, it is an absolute miracle that we have such variety on our plates, that we have any food at all. The fact that, you know, a seed can be planted in the ground and becomes a pepper or a tomato, it's really a beautiful thing. And I think when you go without it all day long, you realize what you've been missing. You start to really savor things. And so some of my best meals are at the iftar time.
Yvonne Maffei writes the blog My Halal Kitchen. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This morning, we're going to skip a few meals and jump straight to dessert. It's that time of year when the peaches are ripe and the blackberries thick on the bush. Just the thing for a perfect summer dessert. And who better to turn to than Chris Kimball? He hosts the PBS show America's Test Kitchen and stops by from time to time to share recipes and talk about culinary history. Morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, thank you, and all the better for the talk about fragrance. This room, our studio here, just is the good smells are just practically overwhelming.
Well, the thing that makes a great summer dessert is you take the principal ingredient, usually fruit, and you let it shine. All of these recipes this morning actually come from the past, from America's culinary past. So we've gone in, taken the basic notion, and freshened it up.
There is a dish here that sounds like quite a throwback. The name says that. Peach Brown Betty. What years does this hark back to?
Well, you start seeing Betty's around 1840, 1850. It was layers of fruit, usually apple. And then they layered buttered, slightly sweetened breadcrumbs in three or four layers. Brown Betty was also a drink. It had water, it had brown sugar, it had ale, it had brandy, and it had two slices of toast.
Where did they put the toast?
They put the toast in the liquid. Don't ask me why.
So, it had to be in a big shaker.
I'm sure they did. But they put some ginger on the toast to add some flavor. So we did a peach brown Betty. And the problem with peaches, of course, is they're juicy. So what we ended up doing is doing this very differently. We did it in a skillet. We cooked the peaches down for a few minutes, a little bit of butter. And then we mixed in some of the breadcrumbs and then topped it with breadcrumbs and threw it in an oven for about 20 minutes. It's very simple to do. And I think the peaches actually are a lot better than apples. And, of course, peaches are an August fruit.
A month, of course, when the days are long and hot and making your own ice cream sounds good. But it's an awful lot of work. You need milk, cream, and eggs, some beating, some cooking, some cooling, and of course a big bulky ice cream machine. Chris has a recipe that takes the sweat out of the process, magic vanilla ice cream. What's magical about it?
Well, okay, here's the problem. This is why people
I'm tasting it to see if that's the magic. I'm sure it is, but
well, there's more to it than that. This is a dessert that takes 3 minutes to put together. And there's no ice cream machine. We figured out two things. Sweetened condensed milk is one of the things that doesn't crystallize when you freeze it. Also, white chocolate morsels will help set up an ice cream. Chocolate, when it gets cold, gets hard. So it is a thickening agent. So we use some whipped cream to aerate. We use a little sour cream for flavor. All of that gets heated in the microwave, just the chips and the milk. You put everything together, you throw it in the freezer, 6 hours, it comes out. And the secret is it comes out creamy.
It looks creamy, Chris. I'm going to just
Well, you have to taste it.
Taste creamy, and I'll give you my judgment.
Your honest opinion. I'm sure you will.
Yep, creamy.
This is like President Reagan, right? You know, trust and verify, right? There we are.
And our next dessert is as fun to say as it is to eat. Blackberry roly-poly.
This goes back hundreds of years where the British, of course, to make puddings, they would take a pastry, a dough, roll it out thin into a rectangle, put some jam or fruit preserves on it, roll it up, put it in cotton, tie the ends, and they would steam it or boil it. The other name for this recipe is Dead Man's Arm. And I can assure you, when I took it out, well, I know, ooh, but you know what it looks like? It looks like a dead man's arm. So that notion of steam puddings that way, we did not like. So we came up with a biscuit dough. We added a little bit more fat to it, a little sugar, and we rolled it out and we made our own jam in about 10 minutes with some fresh blackberries and sugar, put that on the dough, rolled it up, and we baked it for about 40 minutes. And it's fabulous. It's sort of like, you know, in the morning with a fresh hot biscuit with blackberry jam in it. That's what it is.
There is one dessert that you brought to us that looks like it might be actually savory. It's a pie, and I can see tomatoes peeping up through the design in the pie. What is that?
Well, don't forget pies in the 19th century were ubiquitous. I mean, you put anything in a pie. You put chicken pot pie. You'd have steak and kidney pudding, which would be in a pie, apples, fruit.
But those were main dishes. You're presenting this as a dessert?
Well, no, this is really savory. This is the one savory item, which is very summary because it's tomatoes. It was layers of sliced beefsteak tomatoes, a separate layer which had a little mayonnaise, and a little bit of cheese, and so we had layers of that. It's a little bit like a tomato sandwich, except it's a pie, and it's just really good, and it's great in August. I mean, you know, pie for breakfast.
This would be perfect breakfast.
It's very much like an American quiche, which I think is actually a little bit better than quiche, but I'm American.
Chris, it's been a pleasure, as always.
Thank you. Anytime I can come and make you breakfast, just call me.
Chris Kimball's latest cookbook is Cook's Country Blue Ribbon Dessert. You can find all the recipes plus Chris's favorite summer berry pudding at npr.org.
And Renee, it all sounds delicious. I know you and Chris Kimball were talking right there about the Brown Betty dessert inspired by a cocktail, but they took out the alcohol. If you want a kick, there is a new cookbook out there that seems to draw on a similar spirit here. The book is Intoxicated Cupcakes. Author and pastry chef Kate Legere has concocted these tipsy treats with names to match: Hot Toddy Cupcakes, Champagne Party Cupcakes, and a Darkened Stormy. And that has rum in both the cake and the frosting. So two drinks in one right there in the baking cup.
Earlier this summer, some financial firms downgraded their stock rating for the food company General Mills. One of the main reasons was stiff competition in the yogurt business, specifically a craze for Greek yogurt. NPR's Hanzilo Wong explains.
The dairy product is growing in popularity and changing consumer taste and the yogurt industry. Hamdi Ulukaya comes from a long line of dairy farmers in Turkey, and he says the first time he tried yogurt in America, he did not approve.
I was just surprised that there was so much sugar in there, there was so much preservatives and colors.
The yogurt Ulukaya grew up eating was made in the so-called Greek style, popular in the Mediterranean and Middle East, where yogurt is strained. The process gives it a tangy taste and a thick texture, almost like sour cream. Ulukaya says the soupy sweet yogurt found in most American grocery stores threw him for a loop.
And I started asking the questions, why is this so sweet? The answer was, well, Americans wouldn't eat unless it's absolutely, you know, very sweet.
But Ulukaya didn't buy that argument, and in 2005, he bought instead an old Kraft Foods plant in upstate New York, where he created Chobani, now the best-selling Greek-style yogurt brand in the U.S.
In a world of secrets, one woman hides her Chobani in a secret hiding place.
5 years ago, annual sales of Greek-style yogurt totaled just $60 million in the U.S. But this year, food industry analysts predict the dairy product will almost double last year's sales to $1.5 billion. So far, Chobani and the Greek dairy company Faye lead the pack of best-selling Greek-style yogurt brands. But conventional yogurt giants like Danone are now trying to play catch-up with a little help from Greek-American actor John Stamos.
Oikos, Greek yogurt from Danone.
Really?
Wait until you try it.
Not everyone who's tried Greek-style yogurt is making the switch. After all, a cup of Greek yogurt can cost double the price of the conventional kind. But the majority of those who have gone Greek represent a highly desirable consumer group, says David Palmer, a packaged food industry analyst with UBS.
You know, it's sort of what I would envision to be the Starbucks crowd. It's a higher educated, higher income user that resides in the Northeast.
And Palmer says more often than not, the Greek yogurt consumer is female.
Oh, I love Greek yogurt. I'm addicted to it. I buy it all the time.
Kathy Smith recently stopped by a fresh yogurt shop in Washington, D.C., where she ordered a low-fat Greek yogurt parfait. The yogurt shop's owner, David Smith, says there's a devoted Greek yogurt following amongst his customers.
It is the one type of yogurt that when we run out unexpectedly, they get very upset.
David Palmer of UBS says protein-rich Greek yogurt may have the staying power that outlasts other food fads.
When you think about it, it is not easy to get protein in a convenient form. And then if you raise the bar further and say, high protein, low fat, convenient, and tastes great, wow, that might make this a perfect food.
And a potential threat at the breakfast table. Most consumers who try it say a large cup of Greek yogurt can be quite filling. And Palmer says that could eventually give other breakfast foods a run for their money. So cereal, watch out. Hanzilo Wong, NPR News.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News.